You know, we typically only do a cold open if something big has happened after we've recorded. Well, the biggest news possible has happened. We talk about 15 minutes on this podcast about the Milwaukee Bucks and the Chris Middleton injury and what it could mean for them moving forward and how can they possibly fix rotations and what do you go with. And about 10 minutes after this podcast was finished recording, Michael Beasley was traded to the Bucks for Tyler Ennis. We do not get to that news, unfortunately, but I can guarantee a minimum 65-70 minutes tomorrow's podcast, that will be all Michael Beasley all the time. So I apologize for the timing of this podcast, but you will get your Michael Beasley talk tomorrow. As for now, please accept this inadequate podcast. Welcome to the On Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore. We're like close to basketball.
I know. I'm excited. I just realized how excited I am for it. I was so like ready to be out at the end of last season because it was exhausting. And now I feel really refreshed and I'm just really ready to go. I'm excited for the season. I think there's going to be a lot of fun things to talk about. So I'm really looking forward to the next 3 weeks when everyone gets hurt and it dampens my optimism.
Right, yeah, that's always exciting is when we can get excited about the season and then 3 months or 3 weeks in, it's like, oh, that guy blew out his knee. Hey, Chris Middleton's hurt. You know, this team is actually falling apart before they can even get together. That's always a fun aspect of the job is because then you get to figure out like, hey, which rotation player isn't going to be able to step up because it's just not that easy.
Right. Although I will say I think the surprises are what's really nice is the guys that kind of make the jump and make that kind of progress and seeing that happen, I think is one of the exciting things about the season.
Yeah. Your Langston Galloway's, right? Like guys like him are fun to like kind of embrace.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, the best part about right now is, you know, the cliche of everyone 0-0, but it's also like everyone believes they're going to have a good year. Like everyone thinks that they're going to have a good year, you know, like even the Nets are like, we're not going to be great. We're not going to contend for the championship. We may not make the playoffs, but we're going to be better than people think. Like everyone believes that they're going to be better than what people think right now, which is fun.
So when we do our over-under podcast in the near future, we should take the over on everybody.
Right. We'll just take the over.
We just take the over on everyone.
Buy into everyone.
Yeah. Mathematically, someone has to hit the over, right? So we'll get a couple of right. A couple of correct ones.
You know, I should have done. We're going through right now in our spreadsheets and actually putting together our win totals for projections for next year. You know, what I should have done. I should have just given the Kings none and allocated those everywhere else.
Oh no!
Like that's what they should have done.
No, they're going to be fine. By the way, today we're going to talk about your excellent James Harden piece because I'm very intrigued by that. I'm actually writing about the Rockets, so it's a big help. I can just go, hey, look at this. This explains my James Harden stuff. We're going to talk about Chris Middleton, Kevin Garnett buying out, possibly, and then we had one more. Oh, the Warriors. You finally want to talk about the Warriors, which should be.
Yeah, I'm finally ready to talk about the Warriors.
Yeah, you're finally ready.
I've tried not to because it's such a big storyline, and we're going to have to talk about it over and over and over again. So I'm like, okay, no, I'm ready to talk about the Warriors.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that stuff. But with the over-unders, I don't think you should give zero to the Kings.
Well, I guess here's the thing. Everyone else I know is going to win a game.
Right. Yeah, no, you can guarantee at least 29 teams are going a minimum of 1-81.
Right. You know, like Derrick Rose had that quote a couple weeks ago where he said, I think, you know, we can beat anybody on any night. And people took it as we're going to win every game. And I was like, no, he's saying any night that we go in, we can beat that team. Like that's a popular mindset for really good squads. Everyone says it. It's whether or not you really believe it or not. Like I've seen Hawks teams where you ask them like, hey, how do you feel about this game tonight in Denver on a back-to-back after a 5-game road trip? And they're like, well, you know, we think we can win any night. It'll be good to get home. Like, when they immediately switch to, I'm really looking forward to the plane ride home.
Yeah, bus to the planes at 10:40.
That's they don't believe that they can win that game.
What's the most important stat for you guys to control going into Denver's back-to-back tonight? Bus to the planes at 10:40 p.m. That's the stat.
Right. But, like, with the Kings, I guess I've been higher on them the last couple of years and kind of believe like, hey, maybe it's going to happen. But I really think Boogie's kind of checked out.
Oh, okay. See, I kind of feel like I don't think he's checked out yet. I just think that when, I mean, we assume, we haven't really talked about this as much, but we assume Darren Collison will be suspended for a significant chunk of the season, right? Like, if we're going off precedent, which I know we've talked about with Draymond Green nut-punching in the past, that precedent doesn't always matter, but we've had one recent thing since this whole Ray Rice debacle in the NFL that was horribly mismanaged. We've had, like, after that, shortly after that, Jeff Taylor, former Charlotte Bobcats wing, pleaded guilty to domestic abuse and, like, ruining public property in a hotel or something. Like, there were two charges that he pleaded guilty to. He received a 26-game suspension, I believe, something along those lines. Darren Collison, this offseason, has pleaded guilty to domestic violence misdemeanors. And we're, I mean, I don't think the league has to act immediately, but they will act at some point within the next month, and we'll find out not only if he's going to be suspended, which I think he will, but how long. I would guess like around 20-ish games is going to be the standard here, or maybe they'll go even further, or maybe they'll go less. I don't know. I guess I'm just throwing that. They will pick a number and go with that. But then it's like, all right, how much do you believe in Ty Lawson as the replacement? How much do you believe in Jordan Farmar as the backup? What's Garrett Temple going to do with a basketball? That lack of point guard, my ultimate point is that lack of point guard play and not knowing, that could frustrate Boogie real quick, because that's going to be, you know, you need a point guard to play basketball, right? Even on both ends of the floor. Like, they're going to need someone of Darren Collison's ability to just make that team somewhat stabilized.
Yeah, and then, you know, the fact that they have, like, nine centers. And, you know, like, I started thinking, like, on the list of players for Sacramento, like, where does Omri Caspi rank in terms of he's the X best player?
Man, he
and
might...
I like Omri Caspi.
Yeah.
Like, Kings fans get touchy about this. Like, no, he's been really good the last couple of years. Like, he really bounced back. Like, he was bouncing out of the league, and he's, like, cemented himself as a legitimate NBA player. Like,
yeah,
he is really good and does very good things for them. But, like, okay, you know, Cousins, Gay, Aflalo, Willie Cauley-Stein is four.
I don't even know. I kind of think Caspi is in competition for fourth with Collison. Like, that would be my ranking.
And, well, with Collison out is all I meant.
Okay, yeah.
You know, and then you got, like, Kufas, who I really believe in and want him to get traded because I think he's really good still.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, we're talking about Omri Caspi being your fourth through sixth best player. I'm a little concerned
not
by that assertion.
Not ideal in most NBA leagues, I would suggest. Like, not ideal. Yeah, this is just really an imbalanced roster, right? Still, zero wins seems extreme.
I'm just saying I could use those to give everyone else a bump because we all did our first run and all of us were over because you just believe teams are going to be better.
I was way over. I was 74 wins over, which for cynical me is not customary.
High.
Yeah.
There are some interesting ones. And again, we'll get into all this in our massive over-unders podcast, which we'll do in either this week or next, do you think?
Within the next week.
Like, the most interesting one to me is Raptors-Celtics. That's, like, a really – that's a very interesting – because I keep going back and forth on it where I don't want to give Boston credit before they've gotten there because they, like Portland, I do not believe were as good as their record was last year. I think – not dramatically. I think they were, like, a 45-win team that won 47 versus – you know, it's not like I think that they were a 500 team. So I'm trying not to give them too much credit. But then on the Raptors side, I'm like, it's really hard to follow up the best season in franchise history – with then the best season in franchise history. Like, that's tough.
Yeah, I mean, 56 is a lot of wins, right? Like, that, I mean, that's an incredible amount of wins. To build on that, you do, like, this will sound like brilliant analysis. You do have to get better. And how, like, I don't know, like, did just the continuity of it all get them better? Like, that's the real question I have. And they lost Biombo and replaced him with, like, Jared Sullinger and Jakob Poeltl, and I don't know what that means.
And, like, the over-under is only 49.5, so they've got, like, a lot of leeway there.
Yeah.
I was listening to the SI Top 100 podcast with Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver, and I kind of was caught by Andrew Sharp talking about JV and Valanciunas and about how many years are we going to do this where, you know, this could be the year, Valanciunas. And I was like, you know what? You're kind of right. Like, I think that we're sometimes too slow to acknowledge when players make jumps and improve. But I also think that we get an idea of a player being good or having tools, and then we wait too long to just be like, you know what? He's not an impact guy. Like, he's fine, but he's not going to be what he needs to be. And then if you look at that and say, okay, on the nights where JV is not locked in, they no longer have Biombo behind him, and I don't like hardly any of their young guys except for Norman Powell. There's some concern there. Right. I think there's some real concern.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty good last 2 years. Talking about Jonas,
he was
like,
good.
I get that he's not this franchise center, but he was pretty good.
That's the thing. Is like, he was good. The way you phrased it was perfect. He was pretty good. Like, in the playoffs, I was like, finally. Like, especially in that first round series, I was like, okay, here we go. Jonas Valanciunas is ready to make his, like, he's on the scene now. And he got hurt, and so maybe he'll come back and really be revitalized. Part of it is recency bias is always a thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And so the Olympics kind of has stuck with me where I'm like, he was really non-existent there. Like, he just faded into the background. So, I mean, we'll see. I have some concerns with the Raptors. But on the other hand, I'm like, they've got continuity. I like Dwayne Casey a lot as a coach. They do have two All-Stars, technically, in terms of talent. And I like guys like Damari Carroll and Norman Powell. I like all those guys. And plus, Masai Ujiri always kind of like, it wouldn't shock me if some surprise guys kind of came up. One team, though, that I think we definitely want to bang the under on, Milwaukee.
Yeah.
After this month.
Yeah, I felt so good about them up until yesterday afternoon. I really was, like, even with Greg Monroe and Michael Carter Williams, who, you know, I wouldn't say I'm huge fans of their games. Especially once they joined Milwaukee. But I was really talking myself into, like, all right, Giannis, you know, takes a step forward. Middleton's awesome, especially in his role. Jabari Parker is now fully healthy with a full offseason. They've got some good depth. Like, I can really see them getting back to those defensive ways that, where 2 years ago it helped them make the playoffs when they were the fourth best defense in the league and not the 26th best defense last year. Like, I was really talking myself into this. And then Chris Middleton gets hurt. I wasn't saying, like, hey, this is going to be a three-seed or anything, but, like, I thought, like, 45 wins. Like, I really thought they could win 45 games and get in, like, get into the heart of that, like, 5-8 playoff push. And then Middleton has a torn hamstring that requires surgery. He's out 6 months, which means about 70 games. And now I've got, I think I lopped off initially at least 10 wins. I don't know what I ended up with, but, yeah, I'm definitely banging the under on that.
This is kind of an interesting thing to talk about as an abstract. So Sportsline does these adjustments for us. Like, if X thing happens, then the impact is Y. If it doesn't happen, then the impact is Z. Sportsline.com, which has a lot of interesting and great, actually, gambling advice that I've been theoretically using lately. One of the things that they did, though, is always shocking because something massive will happen. They're like, it lops off 3 wins. And you're like, that's it? Like, huge NBA star just went down and they're only going to win 3 fewer games? Like, how is that possible? And then you notice, so the Bucks just lost Chris Middleton, who accounted for 32.5% of all of their made three-pointers last season.
They didn't shoot a lot.
All. Okay. They added some guys. They've got Brogdon and Teletovic. So they added some dudes, but still, like, Middleton is, like, I've talked about this with, I brought this up to like 4 different executives, and I asked, like, well, who'd you rather have, Middleton or DeRozan? They're all like, oh, Middleton, no question.
Right.
Like, I absolutely rather have Middleton. And there's some context of that in terms of the money and perception and things like that, but still, that's how good he is. So he gets gone. Well, the over-under was 39.5 yesterday at Westgate, and now it's only down to 37. And that's after the public hammered the under yesterday. The initial drop was to 37.5, and then the public just, I assume, just hammered it because everyone's like, well, they can't score now. So it's like, we you know, you just said, like, I'll have like 10 wins. Really, the impact of these guys from all the projections say is only a handful of wins, which kind of makes sense when you start to think about, okay, if any your standard team of all these guys are rotation NBA players, they're just not very good, is going to win between 30 and 40 games.
Right.
Like, that's the reality, is, like, not great teams win about 30 to 35. And then you start adding on, like, all right, this guy's worth 2 wins, this guy's worth 2 wins, this guy's worth 3 wins, this guy's worth 4 wins, and now you're into the 40s, and then you're up to 50. And so it kind of makes sense that that's how it works. So I've been trying to like restrain my reaction because I'm like you, where I hear Chris Middleton's out, and I'm like, well, there you go. They're winning 15 games. Like, that's obviously not going to happen. But, you know, that's kind of like the concern. I will tell you this now, the Bucks become interesting for this reason. We're going to find out. This is going to be it's not going to be the final decider. It's going to be a really good test for whether or not Jason Kidd is a good coach. Because we got a lot of information out there to tell us both that he's a really good coach and that he's not so great a coach. Like,
yeah, I'm in.
You really like the
job
that he did with the Nets in his first year.
Loved it. After the first like 2 months, like once they kind of got injured and had to adjust, I loved the adjustments. I loved the way that they approached things in Kidd's first year in Milwaukee.
Right.
Last year was not very good.
Yeah, well, I was sold that first year in Milwaukee. I was like, all right. You know what? I was skeptical after that good year in Brooklyn. But now, like, I really believe. And then last year, the defense fell off so badly.
Yeah.
That I was like, well, you know, maybe we should. And because part of it also is, and a lot of this is just because of Giannis. Like, Giannis is just hard to, he's just hard to figure
it's
out.
It's really hard to quantify, right?
Yeah. Like, I don't mind that they keep moving him around. You and I both are have been in the same spot of like, why don't we just have him be this and just do that with him?
Right.
Because it would, you know, it's the quickest path from A to B. But I understand that they're kind of like, but he could be so much more. Why don't we find out if he can be? I get that. It's just that there is this kind of level of Kidd hasn't been able to figure out the answer with Giannis to be like, he is this and going to do this, and this is where he's good at. We're trying now the point guard thing again, which he tried and looked good and then did it more and was terrible, and then they went away from it and then went back to it and showed some more signs. Like, it's been all over the map, and I don't believe that progress has to be linear, but I think it's interesting that this is going to be a year where we really get to look at Jason Kidd and say, you know, is he getting the most out of this roster? How do we evaluate him as a coach?
Yeah, I completely agree, and, you know, you probably have a better perspective on this than I do because I tend to be more negative with this stuff. Can the defense simply, especially with these two players I'm about to mention, the defensive drop-off simply be, oh yeah, well, Greg Monroe and Michael Carter-Williams were on the team last year and they played a lot of minutes, or is it more, I know that it's more intricate than that, but how much credence do you give to like, oh, Monroe was the big man? And like, there were seriously times, especially early in the season, it lessened as we went along, but they also, you know, tried to adjust as we went along. There were times where Greg Monroe would seriously just wander towards a guy with the ball on the wing, like Mr. Magoo, walking through a construction site, and he would just leave his man at the basket. And like, the offensive player with the ball almost like was too surprised by it and would hesitate before like passing to Robin Lopez for a dunk inside. And so like situations like that definitely colored my perception of how he was playing. But can it be simply MCW and Monroe were on the team, so that's why they suck so much defensively?
I think it could be some of it. I think when I went back and watched, you know what actually they were really bad at? Transition defense.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to figure out like, what's the problem there? And this actually might cause people to pump the brakes a little bit on the panic. Chris Middleton was bad. Like, like wildly flailing his arms like Daffy Duck in the air. Bad. Trying to locate the ball. Yeah. Like, he just got lost in transition defense consistently. Monroe's obviously part of that. The issue there, though, is you say, like, well, Michael Carter-Williams and Greg Monroe played big minutes with him. Well, that's going to happen again.
Like, I do think it's lessened, though, because they have more depth now. Well, they did before Chris Middleton got hurt. But, like, I feel like I'm the only person outside of Cleveland buying into this guy. But, well, I guess some of Milwaukee is, too. But, like, I really think Matthew Dellavedova is a fantastic addition for them. Like, solid defender. He's a really incredible three-point shooter. He doesn't make a ton of mistakes with the ball. Like, I think having that stabilizing force, whether he starts or comes off the bench, does a lot for securing what they want to be as an identity.
Okay. Pop quiz, hot shot. Who's their backup point guard? If Delly starts, who's their backup?
Oh, either Michael Carter-Williams or Tyler Ennis, who I don't think either are any good, or maybe they just go to Giannis, and before the injury, they would have had Middleton do a lot of playmaking.
Right, and like that's where like things get really bad, is you're like, oh, it's MCW and Tyler Ennis, and that's like that's the backup. And then on like the wings, okay, so Middleton's out, so you gotta think probably Rashad Vaughn?
No, he should not play.
I liked him in summer league. I still have hope for him.
Okay. I don't think he should play. It's not he shouldn't play ever, but he was so bad as a rookie. Like
let's say that you went all the way and you actually started a 6'11 point guard, which is nuts, but let's say that you did it. That you actually didn't just use him that way, that you actually started him in that position.
Yeah.
So you got like Giannis, Vaughn or Brogdon, whichever you prefer.
Yeah, I'd rather Brogdon.
Jason Terry, maybe?
You're starting Jason Terry in 2016?
I mean,
Matt.
But this is the thing, is I'm looking at this roster and I'm like, who are you starting at two guard?
Deli, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, so let's say Giannis and Deli.
Yeah.
There's that. Teletovic at the three.
No, he can't defend threes.
I'm trying here. Like, this is the problem, is you start going down, because, you know, you can get away with Henson and Maker at 4-5 and bring Monroe off the bench.
Wait, we're playing Thon Maker this year?
Sure.
Oh, man. I don't know. Like, I guess Parker at the three makes sense?
I guess here is how it all goes. This is, like, where we should get to with the Bucks. Okay? Think how many of these guys are you like, oh, I definitely want him on the floor. Like John Henson, yes. Giannis Antetokounmpo, yes. Michael Carter-Williams, probably not, sadly. Yeah, I feel bad. Like, I hope he makes a jump this year. Prove us wrong.
Yeah, no, I hope he gets to step one.
Like Jabari, yes.
Yeah, you want Jabari on the floor.
Tyler Ennis sadly went to Syracuse.
Right, so he's eliminated from NBA conversation.
Right. Rashad Vaughn is a no for you.
A no Chris, right now. Yeah. Unless he shoots really well. Because if he shoots really well, I think you make up for all of the other issues that he brings to the court, or at least what may carry over from last year.
Right. Middleton's out. Monroe is part of the problem, but you have to play him.
Yeah, you have to play
Mirza, him. Who by the way, is 31.
Yeah, but he feels like 30 and a half.
Right. Deli, yes.
I like Brogdon a lot.
Right. I really like Brogdon a lot, too.
Yeah. Like, he's going to defend.
I wouldn't mind them starting Deli, Brogdon, Jabari, Giannis, Henson. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, but do they have to start Monroe? Will he buy into a bench role on this team?
I will say this. Having, like, spoken with Greg Monroe several times, and, like, I don't have a great feel for him, but just what I know of him, I really do think that Greg Monroe would be like, okay, if that's really what you think, if he'll help us win, okay.
Yeah, like, no, like I like John Henson a lot, but I think there's a difference between, yeah, I'll start behind Andre Drummond, and I'll start behind John Henson, you know?
Yeah. So, like I said, the Bucks are boned with this news. Like, they're just, I mean, it's just bad. So... Because here's the thing. The defense is younger and has to be better. And the offense now is missing a massive chunk.
I mean, their best scorer, right? Like, maybe that's discounting what Giannis will be this year, but I really do think Middleton's their best scorer.
The thing is, they wouldn't do it. Jabari is kind of the hang-up here because you can't trade Jabari because he has so much potential still. Like,
right.
You still look at Jabari Parker and you're like, God, that guy's got a lot of skill. Like he hasn't had a breakout season yet because of the injury, but you cannot give up on him until you're absolutely sure. I would say, though, that like they could go get Will Barton, but they're going to have to give up good assets to get him.
Yeah, and you're not giving up Jabari to get Will Barton, right?
No, but I think if you – it depends on – here's the thing. It all depends on where the organization is at, where ownership is at,
right.
Where the coaches are at with Jabari. Like, there are all these factors. In a vacuum, no. My answer would be I'm not giving up Jabari Parker, period. Like, it's about the future. I want to see. I haven't decided yet. He's a year removed from the injury. No. But if you're in a desperation mode and you're like, we want to win this year. We got to get a two-guard right now. Like, if you get Kenneth Faried and Will Barton and a pick and you get that for Jabari Parker, that ain't bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. I do think, like, you're right. Ownership's perception on what the team is now after the Middleton injury is the key here. Because ideally, you would look at this situation and go, okay, we're back in experimental mode, right? Like, hey, Giannis, you're the point guard. Hey, John Henson, why don't you shoot some threes or something? Like, I don't know what you would do, but but you just go into, like, experimental, like, let's see what these guys can be. Let's let Rashad Vaughn run the point 10 minutes a game and see what happens, you know? Like, you would do that. But if ownership is, hey, we just committed $20 million this season to Delly and Mirza, we got to win something, then that's a problem. If you can allow Jason Kidd to be experimental with all of this, there's just less of a pressure to make up for Middleton's loss. But I mean, Woj reported yesterday, like they're working the phones to find a replacement for Middleton. So it does sound like they are in, we got to win mode.
By the way, following up on that point earlier, cause I couldn't pulse energy up while we were talking, the Bucks were 30th in the league in transition defense last season.
Yeah, but that
dead
would,
last.
If we were going by how many teams are in the NFL, that's third to worst. So
that's not so bad. They gave up a 62% effective field goal percentage.
That sounds
and
high.
Foul. And they gave up free throws 17% of the time.
Also sounds high. That's a lot.
Not great.
Hey, speaking of bad transition defense and free throws.
Oh.
You wrote an excellent thing. Excellent breakdown of whether or not James Harden is overrated and underrated at the exact same time. I will spare everyone my spiel on I don't believe in ratedness at this point because everyone knows it and we don't need to get into that. But just for the sake of what you wrote, excellent breakdown. This isn't just me blowing smoke up your ass. Excellent breakdown of the good and the bad of everything. And I think that's the conversation we need to have about James Harden is, look, he is spectacular at these things. He is also horrifically embarrassing at these other things. Where's the tipping point in the value in terms of the offense he generates and the defense he gives up? And much to your point, like kind of surprise point about Chris Middleton last year, when I did that 2.5 hour viewing of Rockets transition defense like 3 months into the season.
That's self-flagellation?
Yeah, it was really unpleasant. And at the same time, like I was expecting going in to be like, oh man, these are a bunch of James Harden gaffes, right? And I found like being way more disappointed in Trevor Ariza at the time, which kind of like plays into like your whole surprise and like, hey, Middleton was actually really bad in transition defense last year. And so I think that Rockets team was obviously flawed, spoiler alert. But at the same time, like we kind of just lump all these bad things onto Harden, and maybe that's correct because it's a leadership thing and he's their best player, but also maybe it's just the easy, lazy thing to do.
First off, your transition was a Eurostep, by the way, so I just want to applaud you for that, because that also is appropriate, given that it's Harden.
Right.
I've actually written a lot about overrated versus underrated this summer,
yeah.
And I'm not just doing it to tweak you. I'm actually, like, the fact that you don't believe it got me thinking about the idea of it. That plus reading Chuck Klosterman's new book is kind of where I started to think about
it. I have that, and I got to read it. I still haven't read it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. You especially, I think, will get a lot out of it because what it does is it really forces you to think about what we think, like how we evaluate things right now versus how often in any given period of time that looks completely wrong.
Yeah.
And I always think that kind of perspective is good. The thing with Harden, you know, you mentioned Trevor Ariza, and I noticed that too. The piece on the Harden thing could have been bigger. It was 37 as it is, so I didn't want to go any larger. But there was a lot of other ideas that I actually do want to think about and talk about. Like one of them is the fact that my theory, and this has been backed up by a bunch of people do believe this, is that Harden set an example last year going into camp. And he was not in shape,
right.
And he gave really poor effort to start the year, and that really infected the defense. And you saw these good defenders go haywire. There are a number of reasons why good defenders can get bad. It can be scheme, it can be approach, it can be a bunch of things. A player the other day told me that one of the problems that he had on disappointing defense last year was not him or personnel, that it was actually the coach kept changing pick and roll schemes. And if you don't have any sort of consistency and you don't know what you're doing, you're going to give up more points. And I saw that firsthand a couple of years ago in Denver with Brian Shaw.
Yeah.
So the Rockets were throwing everything at the wall, trying to get something to stick. And that can attribute to a lot of this stuff. But the fact that you had Trevor Ariza, who's always given good effort and his went downhill, and Corey Brewer, who's not a good defender, but gives good effort and his went downhill.
Yeah.
And on and on and on down the line, you saw good defenders play badly. It's not that it was all Harden. It was that Harden set a tone that I do think infected, because I do believe the defense I've been fascinated since I started covering the league by the idea of defense being mostly an effort thing, which the best defenders will tell you. Like Andre Iguodala, the first thing he said to me was, look, defense, first and foremost, most of it is just trying. It's just being willing to give the effort. Between that and then the very complicated mechanics of communication and understanding patterns and knowing how to read things and then instincts, all of those things combined. So it's not this complicated. It's not this really simple thing, but it's also not this really complicated thing. It's kind of right. It's this real convergence of the two. You have to have that effort, though, because if you do not have an atmosphere of effort, you're going to be bad. And we saw that with Harden consistently over and over and over again. My issue is that the conversation really shifted partway through last year. And I was part of this where the defensive lapses were so glaring and so bothersome if you were a fan of good basketball that you did tend to take for granted how awesome he is offensively. Like, yeah. This guy has the ability to do everything that the top level guys can do. Like, he can get to the rim. He's not in a freight train like LeBron, but his ability to – he is strong and he is fast and he is quick and he's very elusive. He's like a blend between Wade and LeBron, not quantitatively, but qualitatively.
Right.
Like, he's able to use the Euro step and some strength and finish. He's a remarkable shooter. He's got a step back. He's got great instincts on when to take the pull up. He can shoot off the dribble. He's great in spot up. Like, all of these things. He has the whole package.
He's stupid good at offense. Like, just stupid good. Like, incomprehensibly good.
And in modern terms, though, that's become mostly about shooting. Harden's a fantastic playmaker.
Yeah.
He is a tremendous playmaker. I consider him to be better at that than Steph Curry. I will note that I was surprised at that Steph ranks higher in when you factor the adjusted assist rates on NBA.com have Steph as like third or fourth best. So when you factor threes, free throws, and something else, I forget. Oh, secondary passes. So yeah. The pass that he makes to Clay that makes it to the corner to Iguodala who hits a three. When you factor those in, like Curry ranks higher than Harden. So that like made me kind of reevaluate how I see Curry. But Harden is still this incredible playmaker. Like, he's got real chemistry with Clint Capella. They're going to be a problem in pick and roll, I think, this year. Like, they're going to be pretty good. One thing I want to ask you about, actually, with Harden, because I didn't get to focus on his weaknesses because it would have kind of defeated the point, right? To be like, hey, he's really bad defense, but he's really great at offense, except for these things, which he's not so good at. He was 40th percentile in transition last year. And this is the more notable one. He was really bad at runners. Like, he is not good with the runner, which I was surprised at. I would have thought that would come naturally to him. But then I started to think about it, and I was like, I don't remember a lot of teardrops that, like, Harden's hit. Like, he just hasn't hit a lot of – like, he doesn't take a lot of those, and he doesn't make a lot of them that I can remember.
Yeah, I think the transition thing is heavily weighted on can you draw fouls, right? And you'd think of Harden, and he can draw fouls because he's James Harden. Like, that's what he does. But I do think that – he especially can get into these lapses where he's hunting contact in transition. And while he draws, like, I think he draws fouls at like, I don't know, like 17-18% clip in transition. But I think he's trying to draw fouls like 30-40% of the time. Right. And so because of that disparity, you know, that's just an estimation by me. That's not an analytical thing, but because of that disparity, I think it throws him into a lot of bad situations in transition. And so because of that, you know, like you want to be around 60% field goal percentage. And I guess if you're a guard, especially one like Harden, like you probably want to have an effective field goal percentage of like 67, 68%. Like you want it about 7-8% higher than what your field goal percentage is in those situations, especially in transition. And he was like around 50 for field goal percentage and like 58 for effective field goal percentage. And that's not bad. It's just not elite. And you expect him to be elite in that situation. I think I wonder like what the tie-in is between his struggle with runners and floaters and his propensity for just the ball sticking to him. You know, like he over dribbles the ball and sometimes that's good and sometimes it's bad, but he over dribbles the ball. And I wonder, does that take you out of a rhythm for attacking, getting into the teeth and, you know, pushing that floater over a defender? I kind of feel like it does, but I don't know if there's any real evidence to back up that theory.
It does feel like he goes to his comfort zone a lot.
Yeah, because if you think about Tony Parker, maybe that's an unfair comparison because they are.
I was just thinking that same thing.
Because they're completely different players, but Tony Parker attacks to get in the middle and throw up that runner because he's so good at it, right? Whereas with Harden, that's never a first option for him. That seems like a last resort, and I think we've noticed in isolation plays that end of shot clock situations that where guys are kind of forced to bail a team out. If you're not into your first kind of option and you are in a bailout situation, I kind of think the floater is a bailout situation for Harden, and so he's probably not going to be good at it.
It's interesting to think about this season because 2013, his first year with Houston, great.
Yeah. We wonder could he be a superstar, right? Like, is Houston doing the right thing in acquiring him and giving him all this money? And immediately he backed that up with like, yep, no, he's a superstar. That's correct.
Yeah. And then 2014, they made the playoffs, got bounced in the first round, and that was when the first defense jokes really started to come out about him. That's when I remember the memes kind of hitting with 2014. 2015, he played much better defense and had an MVP caliber season.
Yeah, he was great.
And then 2016, he takes a step backwards. So I'm like, okay, is there a pattern? Is he gonna make this jump back? I'll be very interested to see how he and D'Antoni fit. That's the key. It's huge on both of them too. I've so long preached the good of Mike D'Antoni that I also understand the bad really well. And like, Mike's really going to make sure that he connects with him. Like, he has to get James Harden on his side.
Well,
because when he does not get those guys on his side, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it gets real bad. This is kind of what I'm writing about for tomorrow. In that same respect, like, these guys kind of need to prop each other up because Harden, as you've laid out in this article, like, he's kind of a divisive figure, and how we view him will, moving forward, will probably be dependent on how he approaches this season and how effective he is as a leader this season. And at the same time, Mike D'Antoni's this offensive genius, right? Like, this guy who has transformed the modern day basketball. Like, Alvin Gentry and Steve Kerr praised him when they won the championship 2 years ago, saying like, look, this is his system that we have stolen from, and praise be to Mike D'Antoni. But at the same time, in kind of a similar sense to how we talk about the triangle now, like, I think D'Antoni was revolutionary, but I wonder how revolutionary he still is, because now everyone's kind of doing what he did. So does it make what he's doing now any less special or unique when everyone's kind of picking apart the good parts of it and implementing that? And because of that, if he can't get Harden to be this supernova playmaker, which I think Harden has the capability of being, and I agree with your assessment on his playmaking, if he doesn't embrace that role, I think the system falls flat on its face this year.
They need a reason to make a big comeback, or they got to make a trade of him and Brewer. But they're also like, Eric Gordon was surprisingly okay last year defensively. I was surprised at how well I thought Eric Gordon defended. But man, every minute that Harden and Ryan Anderson are on the floor,
that's gonna be rough.
They're gonna score a lot, but they are gonna have to score like 1.1 points per possession in order to keep track, because they are just going to bleed constantly with those two on the floor.
But
it's going to be
they can tough. Do it. I mean, they have the personnel to score 110 points per 100 possession. Like, they really can do it. I'm worried. I believe in Clint Capella, but if he gets injured or he gets into foul trouble in games, I'm just not buying Nene as the backup you need to anchor defense. I know he was better in Washington towards the last couple of years, and I know he was a solid enough rim protector. I'm not buying it for whatever reason.
I'm hoping Montrezl Harrell has grown up a little bit. That's part of my hope.
Yeah, he's like 6'8", isn't he?
Yeah, but he's also like, he's just a beast.
He's also a freak athlete. I just don't know. I don't know that he has that capability regularly as an NBA rim protector. Maybe he does, and I'm completely wrong about that. But I know
Nene doesn't at this point. I know.
Touche.
One thing I had this thought about, and I think I'm going to write something about it on Facebook, is so there's this management book. My dad gave me a bunch of like old management books that he had for some reason, and one of them that I actually liked was Good to Great. And it's this theory that successful companies, and one of the problems is that sometimes companies look at all their issues and they say, we're trying to fix this and this and this and this and this, and it divides all your resources. Find the thing that you're really good at and make that great, and then use that energy to kind of correct some of the other measures, unless it's like a triage situation. So with Houston, you know, hope that they can be 15, middle of the pack, and just be awesome offensively, and that will get you far enough. They just can't be bottom 20.
Right.
That's the thing. Like, they just can't be bottom 20 in defense. Problem is, you look at it and you're like, they are very likely to be bottom 20 in defense. And that's why I think trying to figure out if they're going to make the playoffs or not is tough. I do not think that they are an automatic yes for the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm definitely leaning towards playoffs for, you know, as opposed to no playoffs. I think they'll just be good enough offensively no matter what, but whether or not that means like, hey, they're the 8th seed and they're going to get killed by the Warriors in the first round, you know, I don't know what that does for how we view them year one of this and you know, year, what is it, 5 of James Harden in Houston? Like, I don't know how that colors our perception.
Yeah. What else is going on?
Speaking of things bouncing away, Kevin Garnett might be getting bought out from the Minnesota Timberwolves, and if so, is he going to sign with the Clippers, or does that just mean he's retiring and Glenn Taylor is trying to save a few bucks?
John
Krasinski.
It's Krasinski. John Krasinski was tweeting about this last night about kind of how complex the situation is and how, you know, KG wanted to stay there and wanted, like they were talking about him having an ownership stake, and he was like, that was it. Like, he was just going to be the franchise icon. That was it. But then, sadly, Flip died, and that right. changed everything. Like, it right. just changed the whole dynamic. It's interesting to me that that Thibodeau takes over, and this is kind of I'm a little surprised. I would have thought that Tom would have come in and just been like, KG's like the guy and he's like the icon and like whatever he wants, and like they have a pre-existing relationship. I was surprised that this is how this has worked out, and it's unfortunate. Like, I like the idea of Garnett kind of giving the few years of his career back to Minnesota. If I had to bet, I will bet that Kevin Garnett will join the Clippers. I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think he'll do that. I think it'll be fun to see him and Pierce on the floor in garbage time.
I don't think he plays anymore.
My only thing is, if he can suck a little bit more money out of the NBA, I think he will. I think if he can draw a little bit more cash, I think he'll do it.
Yeah, maybe.
You can say I don't think he needs it, but you can say that about any player, and they continue to do so. I think
if Kevin Garnett can get $8 million this year, he will get $8 million this year. No, I'm with you on that. Like, I think that he very much would like to take the money as opposed to not take the money. You know, there's a reason no one's ever played past what he's played, right? Like, it's so much mileage. And he's, by all accounts, like, the little news we have about Kevin Garnett this summer he's been working out, and he's working out hard, and he's trying to get ready for the season. It's just whether or not his body will hold up. According to Jerry Zagoda, I believe Jerry Zagoda today, or at least it was the Star Tribune in Minneapolis, Glenn Taylor said things are not as advanced as were reported yesterday, that it's more he's waiting for a decision, and if KG decides not to play anymore, then they'll work on a buyout. I mean, that's Glenn Taylor, and while you would trust the owner of the team, that doesn't mean KG won't take the buyout and then be like, yeah, I don't know, maybe I'll go try to play for Doc and see if I see if I can do it. Like, either thing can happen. The passing of Flip did very much like throw a wrench into those plans when there was talk of 30% of the team being sold to Kaplan, the Grizzlies minority owner. KG was very much not in those plans from what I heard, and that didn't go over great, and that's, you know, that kind of, I think, maybe brought back the feelings of when KG left Minnesota and was traded to Boston, and Glenn Taylor questioned his commitment and all this stuff. Like, that caused a huge rift that only Flip was able to, you know, mildly repair enough to get KG to agree to come back to the Timberwolves and help. I think that Karl-Anthony Towns will be bummed out by this news if KG is not there, but I don't think it's going to, like, devastate him, because I think Towns is just focused.
You realize you're dangerously close to being a reporter, right?
I've done a little bit of reporting this summer, and
you are dangerously close to being a journalist.
I really don't like it.
Toeing the line, my friend.
It's uncomfortable. It's like wearing pants. I don't like that. I don't like reporting.
First journalist sans pants.
All right, let's talk about the Warriors for like 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
What interests you about the Warriors to where you are ready to talk about them?
The idea of Durant in the elbow post is very – that's interesting to me in terms of trying to understand how they're going to look and how they're going to operate. The way that they're going to dominate is kind of where it kind of gets interesting. Trying to see – I guess I'll say this. There's going to be something that surprises us, both in what they're good at and what they struggle. Like, that's just how it is with the NBA. Like, things don't always make linear sense. Like, it's just not how it is, you know? And so I think that there's going to be something that catches us off guard with this team in terms of, oh, I didn't expect that to happen.
Right.
And like, oh, hey, didn't think they'd be this good at this. I think it might be like they just gel really fast. I think the talk of them gelling is really overblown because people are using it off of the old super team formula. And I'm like,
this isn't that.
Three of these guys have been playing together for 4 years.
Right.
Like, they know what they're doing. It's one guy who happens to be really smart and is really amiable and really coachable that they have to get integrated. And I do not think that's going to be a problem. I also think Steve Kerr is a smart enough coach to understand how to do that. I've moved away from the thought that Curry is definitely going to be the number one on this team. I've moved away from that. I'm now back into, oh, yeah, that's right. He is Kevin Durant, and he will be treated as such. And I think that he carries enough respect with them to warrant that, which is a really good thing.
I have a question for you. Should we have been looking at this situation of the addition of Kevin Durant and how everybody adapts to each other the same way that it ended up being with LaMarcus Aldridge year one with the Spurs? Because it was always like, oh, Aldridge is going to have to change the way he plays and blah, 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 right? And then we kind of figured out, or didn't figure out, we were basically told, like, no, they're going to run stuff through LaMarcus. Like, he's going to get to play his game. I wonder if offensively that's how it's going to be with Durant and the Warriors. Of like, we were like, oh, he's just going to take Harrison Barnes' spot, or he takes Clay's and Clay moves the Harrison Barnes role and all this within the offense. Or will it be, no, let KD do what he does and then we'll play around him? I kind of think like that's, it's very similar to the Aldridge Spurs thing.
This might be the most interesting Curry season. Like, this is going to be a really interesting Curry season.
Which is amazing, coming off an MVP and then a unanimous MVP and then all the crap that happened around that.
Right, and then losing 3-1 in the finals. And then, so I think, like last year it was, oh, can Curry keep it up? Can he repeat? And obviously he surprised everyone with what he accomplished, which is amazing and one of the all-time. And, like, I still struggle with it. Like, there are opinions I have that I just can't get away with. there are certain things that I'm like, no, I really believe this. And people are like, you're just stupid. And I'm still like, I don't know. Like, if you're talking about regular season, like, that was the best regular season performance of all time. It just was. Like, you know.
It might be. Yeah. I mean, it's
shooting efficiency, impact on the game, number of wins. Like, I don't know how you argue otherwise. It's just separate from the playoffs.
And yes, before anyone tweets us after listening to it, yes, we know if you don't get the ring, it doesn't necessarily matter. Like, we get all that. Like, you don't have to tweet that.
Right, so like if you want to say whole season counting the playoffs, then no, it obviously wasn't. But, you know, if they hadn't made the playoffs, I wouldn't say that. If they hadn't won 73 games, I might not even say that. I don't know. Like, that season stacks. I think I'm up there with, you know, probably Jordan 92?
Yeah, 92.
Probably 92. Probably Jordan 92 and LeBron 2009 or 2012. Take your pick.
Yeah, I would say LeBron 2012-13 was up there.
I still think 12 was better than 13 because he used the post.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a debate for another day.
Right.
So anyway, this is a really interesting Curry year because is he going to be Steph or is he going to be like point guard leader, game evolves so that we can be better Steph? But even then, it's like you don't need to be better. Like when you were just you. You guys were the best team in NBA history. It's really complicated. Like it will be interesting to watch in the macro. I'm not as interested in the micro because I'm just like I know that they're up 15 in the fourth quarter. Yes, I am aware that they are up 35.
Right.
Yes, I know that they have won 24 straight. What does this mean?
I'm curious. I'm fascinated with how they will defend without a rim protector. I think that can lead to much smarter defensive schemes, but there is a certain level of, like, you don't need a rim protector to be really good in the NBA defensively, but it helps, right? And Zaza Pachulia is a solid positional defender, and Kerr kind of talked with that, talked with Tim Kawakami about that stuff, about how they're going to defend and resting guys and staggering minutes and all this stuff. I'm very intrigued by that. I think you could just say, like, well, Draymond Green's the rim protector. Well, not if he's defending the pick and roll, you know, 20 feet away from the basket. Like, you do still need that Bogut or that Festus Ezeli, and I wonder how Pachulia is able to do with those improved defenders around him.
Was Draymond as good last year defensively as he was the year before?
I would say no.
It's not huge, right? We're not saying he wasn't good.
Yeah, it's not like a gigantic drop-off. I would say he was marginally worse. I also don't think he needed to be as good.
Right, he didn't need to be as good.
Right. And they weren't as good defensively as a team, right?
Like, correct.
They were just blowing teams out. It didn't matter what it mattered how they defended, but not matching what they did the year before.
Yeah. And I think that actually wound up mattering, because I think it's part of the reason that they quote unquote struggled with Portland. I think it's why they struggled with OKC, and I think it's why they lost the finals, the defense wasn't quite as good as it was last year, which shows you have to be really great at all these things.
Like, all that strength and numbers mumbo-jumbo marketing stuff was kind of weakened severely in the last three games of the finals, right? Because you lose Draymond. Well, the next man up wasn't able to do what Draymond did, and then Bogut got hurt, and then Andre Iguodala, I don't know, had no back or whatever, like, whatever it was. And that's not why they lost, because they lost, right? But, like, that showed that it isn't just, oh, this team's awesome. It's that they have these awesome individual players that do certain things, and when those guys can't do certain things, things can fall apart pretty dramatically.
Yeah, Daniel LaRue had a really great piece on The Athletic during the finals, or right after the finals, about the decisions to play Varejao so much and how that cost them. It was worth a read. You know, I think defensively, here is a question. You know, Draymond has, if you ask Kerr why he doesn't play the death lineup all the time, because anytime that they struggle, that's all that the Warriors high level media guys, Nate Duncan, Ethan Sherwood, Strauss, Marcus Thompson, like all those guys just constantly like, where's the death lineup? Why is the death lineup out there? They didn't put the death lineup in. Where's the death lineup? And Kerr would always say, like, look, I can't do it for these long stretches. They do get tired. Like, they physically tell me they are worn out. I can see that they are tired. Draymond's played lots of minutes in a draining position the last two seasons with runs to the finals all the way into mid-June. And so it's going to be like, look, Draymond could come in and get back to like high level and just destroy everyone, but that's what they're going to need. If you're asking like, how are they going to do, that is the answer, because I don't think that McAdoo is ready to take on a big defensive role. Zaza is a... I was huge on Zaza in Atlanta, and I was huge on Zaza in Milwaukee, and I was like, everyone should go get this guy. And then I saw him in Dallas, and I actually started watching him like there's a reason he didn't play as much in the playoffs. Like, there was a drop-off.
Matt, you're just upset at the all-star hype he got. This is clearly just backlash to all-star Zaza Pachulia.
I do take all-stars really seriously these days. But if Zaza has hit a cliff...
Yeah, which is possible.
And that's gonna be, like, now we're going to be in a real, but not because they have JaVale McGee, who Andre Iguodala vouched for. So.
We might be 9 months away from NBA champion JaVale McGee.
Oh man!
And why wouldn't he play as many minutes this year as Varejao did last year? What's the difference?
I would bet will happen. He's probably going to be lovable and likely with the media, like. This is what happens with all of these guys.
He's
like, Andre Iguodala can't shoot threes. Suddenly he's raining them down from the outside. Like, JaVale is going to become an elite rim protector and a lovable, huggable guy for the Warriors. That's what's going to happen, because that's how that happens with this team.
No, JaVale McGee is going to be the new most Bates. Why not? I find it. I do think it's interesting that Kerr, in the same thing with. By the way, just go read the Tim Kawakami thing. He said, we don't expect anything from Kevon Looney and Damian Jones, their first round pick this year, right away. Like, we don't expect anything from them. So that really does mean, like, hey, David West, you know, for all of his veteran savvy, like, he's going to have to defend, right? And Varejao, mean like he's going to play. And JaVale McGee, assuming he makes a roster, which it sounds like he might, you know, he may really play some minutes. And if anything, like, we're going to judge them. We're ultimately going to judge them like, all right, if you win the championship, that's the only way you can be successful, right? But we're still going to judge them by how many regular season wins they have, because they won 73 last year and they've won 140 in the last two regular seasons, which is just a stupid sentence to say. But we're gonna judge them based on wins, but it will be it will be more beneficial to them now to get JaVale McGee up to speed, if that's even possible, and to not have Draymond Green do as much this year as he's done the past 2 years, like you mentioned, because that three straight years of playing in the finals, that is going to matter, right? Like, that wear and tear matters. He played in the Olympics. He didn't play well in the Olympics. He didn't play a lot, but he was in the Olympics. Like, he did all that stuff. Doing this year after year after year builds up, and it's why it's so ridiculous LeBron's been to 1,000 straight NBA finals, and why it's so hard for teams to get back to three straight finals and all this stuff. You have to find a way to rest. You have to find a way to pace yourselves, and they may have to find a way to put JaVale McGee on the court a lot.
I have to bounce because I got a radio thing coming up soon, but I need your advice on something. Is there a launching point with Veep that I can get into that is not season one? Because I've tried three times and I cannot get into it, and I feel like less of a person than the rest of the planet for not being into Veep. Like, there are things I like about it, and I do laugh.
Yeah, but you're definitely a horrible person for not getting into Veep. I will agree on that.
I understand.
That.
Like, you're the person I went to confirm, and you're who I go to find out if I'm a terrible person.
Because as a terrible person, I can really point that out when other people. So if you've tried to get into it, you kind of have the idea of who the characters are, right? Like, you've tried a couple of times. Jump into season two. Season two is really good. I don't think you'll miss a whole lot. Like, or maybe like the last two episodes, of season one. Try that and see if that carries you on into season two.
I'm binging BoJack right now.
Oh my god, I love BoJack.
And I think I'm going to catch up on Atlanta tonight too.
I'm caught up on Mr. Robot, except I have to watch the season finale for season two, but I can't recommend that enough as well.
Okay, we'll be back soon with
over-unders and all kinds of preview crap. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks.